Welcome to Drop Everything podcast number 136. I'm your host, Dan Holzman. On this podcast, our special guest is Cassandra Smythe. Before we talk to Cassandra, though, let's thank our sponsor, the IJA. That stands for International Jugglers Association. Information about this great group of jugglers, including this summer's festival, can be found at juggle.org. A special shout out to Around Square Toys and Matthew Hebert for hooking me up with some cool Beglary, Knucklebones, and some MK Ultras. For all your skill toy needs, check out Around Square. All right, now drop everything. Get ready for Cassandra Smythe. Welcome to the Drop Everything podcast number 136. I'm your host, Dan Holzman. On this podcast, our special guest is Cassandra Smythe. Hello, Cassandra.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Dan.
Real pleasure. You've been quite the presence at the last festivals I've been at. It seems like over the last 6 or 7 years, you've been a very, very present and been very visible at the different festivals as a prop maker, a performer. And I thought it was about time we talked about that and had a little discussion. So happy to have you on the show.
Thanks. Yeah, it was great chit-chatting with you the last few times I've run into you, as always. So.
Yeah, we actually ran into each other in the airport on the way to Portland and sat next to each other and actually chatted the whole flight about juggling, the state of juggling. And I think we fixed all the problems.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it was a good talk.
Yeah, between the two of us, we both have a lot of opinions about juggling and performing and flow. So let's start, though, at the beginning, even before poi and juggling. What were you like as a kid? Where were you born and what were you like in the family unit?
I'm from Santa Fe, New Mexico. I'm Hispanic. I have a very, New Mexico is a very unique state. It's like Spanish, Native American, Mexican, all kind of blend together. But I've always felt like the black sheep of my family. I was always like the artsy kid out of everyone. I was, I've always been into drawing. I was president of the art club when I was in high school, and then I have 2 arts degrees. So I've always been very different from my family. My family's very like family oriented, you know, like Hispanic culture and heritage. It's like your tias and your primas, and everyone is just like right next to each other, like within the same cul-de-sac. They all go to each other's houses every day, and my family's still very family oriented, and I'm like the hippie artist.
So you had brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have 2 brothers, older brothers. They're both heavy metal heads. And yeah, they're also very different from me. But my family loves me. They support me on anything that I do. And they think that I'm, you know, fun always every time they spend time with me. So that's great.
And what business were they in? How did they support themselves and the family?
My parents?
Yeah.
My dad was a project manager at the Los Alamos Labs where the atomic bombs were made.
Cool.
Yeah. So yeah. He's retired. And then my mom worked for the state as an accountant for a long time. And she's also retired. Both of my parents are retired. And yeah.
Any connection to the variety arts? Did you go see shows? Were you interested in magic or juggling as a kid?
No, not really. Actually, the first time I ever saw fire dancing is at, it's actually a big cultural thing in New Mexico. It's called Zobra, and they have fire dancers that dance before it's like the man. He's actually been going on about 20 years longer than Burning Man, but it's called Zobra, and they call him Zozo, and it's a 50-foot man that they burn that's 2 fiestas weekends right before the whole like shebang, and that you put your glooms in old man gloom, and then they have a big fire performance right before, and then they burn him. And it's, look him up, it's a Zobra.
Yeah, Zobra. And have you been to the Burning Man and said, hey, this is old news?
Well, that's kind of how I've always felt about Burning Man, because I grew up with Zobra and I had been involved in so many different ways and like the doing different things. So when I heard about Burning Man, I was like, what a ripoff.
and you talk about fire dancing. Do you mean they were doing poi, or what kind of fire were they using?
Poi, fans.
Okay.
belly dancing with fans. And so I grew up always watching every year, seeing the fire show before Old Man Gloom got burned since I was a kid. And I was actually in it in 2011, which was fun.
And did you put your cares in Old Man Gloom's box? Did you fill out a
Oh,
card?
you
And
can actually, yeah, that's what you can do. You can go go and get a piece of paper and write all your glooms from the year, and you can go put it into his head. And then, yeah, no, I'm not even kidding. And
no,
then,
sounds good.
yeah, it's great. And then they burn him.
I got a few glooms I could burn up. I got a few glooms I could get rid of.
Yeah, and they have little kids in these little like ghost outfits. It's like a whole show right before that come out, and those are the little glooms, and they're like, woo!
Now,
That's the first place I ever saw fire dancing.
your name does not sound very Hispanic, though. Is that, am I getting
No,
that
it's
wrong?
Smythe. No.
Smythe.
So Smythe is actually Irish, and that is my dad's dad. As he's the only one that's
Okay.
I don't know much about my dad's family, my dad's family, because he's an immigrant, but my other grandparents are Gonzalez and Salazar and Gomez.
Okay.
So those are my other three that our whole family still live in New Mexico. So
Is Cassandra also a kind of a family traditional name? That's another name you don't hear very often.
Sandra is actually my mom's name, so they named me kind of after my mom, but a little different. So it's they didn't want it to be Cassandra. They wanted something. They went back for Cassandra. So.
Yeah, because the spelling is interesting. Cassaundra is interesting.
It's very different. Yeah, so it's very interesting. Yeah, Smythe is definitely Irish and not Hispanic, but my whole family is Hispanic. So it's people have said that too. I'm like, if you go and visit them, like I actually just spent time with my aunt that's almost 100 last year, and she was talking about how she grew up with her grandmother and they didn't have electricity. And she was telling me about how the because she still makes chicos where you dry the corn outside on the line, and she grew up without drying meats and like making everything very. She was so funny because she was trying to show me how to make sopapillas and this and that, and it was just, she's very, my family's very, very traditional. They're out, and most of them live in Espanola, which is like very small town. Yeah, I'm very different from them. So you would meet me and you'd be like, oh, thinking that my family is this like super traditional Hispanic family. Like, no. But if you go and meet them, you wouldn't think that I was related to them.
Now you say you're kind of the black sheep. Do you
Yeah.
think they want you to pursue a different career or something more traditional?
No, not really. I think they're just like, they support me on what I want to do. And I've always been into art. As long as I'm doing, putting effort,
Yeah.
they support that. So,
I think that's fair. I think that's fair in life in general. If people are putting effort into what they want to do, they're living independently, they're not, bugging you for support all the time, financially or whatever, then they should be allowed to pursue their own passions.
you would think so. I mean, I understand that some families aren't so supportive and they want them to do what they want to do, but my family's let me do what I want to do. But I've also been supporting myself for a very long time. I've always been a pretty hard worker, so.
Yeah, I think that's the key, is hard worker.
Yeah.
I think my parents, especially my mom, I'm sure lawyer would have been a much more accepted career path or something, something professional like that. But we gotta be who we gotta be, right?
Yeah, you
So
want to
growing
be.
up, art was your thing. What kind of mediums did you use?
I did a lot of drawing, and then I've also been talking about like I'm drawing actually right now the shirt for this year's IJA in Procreate.
Nice.
Like that's the new hotness when it comes to like drawing apps. And I was talking to one of my roommates the other day, and he's about to take Photoshop classes. He's been working on becoming a tattoo artist. He's also very skilled, but I remember using my little box computer back in the day and like drawing in paint. And then I had my little floppy disks with all my little art drawings on the computer. But I did hand drawing, and then I've been working in Photoshop since PS3 for a long time, and then Illustrator. So I'm not like very technologically advanced, but I know programs really well for drawing. Like Illustrator and Photoshop. I've been working in for like 12 years or something like that. Illustrator and longer for Photoshop. Now I'm learning the new Procreate that everyone's been using. But yeah, hand drawing. I also have a fine arts degree, so when which my fine arts degree was drawing and painting, jewelry making, and photography.
No, how does someone become the shirt designer? Is that something you applied for, or do they reach out to you? How does someone do that?
How did I get into that? I don't know. I started the first year. I don't remember the first year that I made the shirt design. I've for IJN. I don't even know how I got into it. I think I started talking to Erin Stevens. Erin's very supportive of female jugglers, so she's always been very supportive of me ever since I've met her. And I think I started doing art for different festivals, and then this is actually my fourth year doing the IJA branding.
Oh, okay. I did not know that at all. That's interesting.
Yeah, and they
That.
have like two other designers, or I think a few other designers that they like to work with. They like to they have their actual branding as IJA with their colors, and then they have different, they want to have each year different, basically. They don't want to have the same designer doing, you know, the festival designs every year, which I really like. So yeah, this is my fourth year doing it, to go off on a tangent about that, but
That's okay. When I directed the festival, the IJ was very big on where's your branded logo? And I'm like, I need a branded logo to do the festival. So.
I like the, oh, you mean yours as like a juggler, Dan Holzman, or
No,
your
just when I directed
podcast?
one of the IJ festivals about 10 years ago, I think it was.
Oh.
And yeah, they made sure I had a branded logo,
What?
unique for that
Oh.
particular festival. So.
I see. Interesting.
Yeah. I think this was
Yeah.
before that I even knew you, because this was back in the Cedar Rapids, which was the 75th. I'm not sure what number we're on now, but that was quite a few years ago now, 8 or 9 years ago. Something I forget.
Yeah, let me see. I don't remember the first year that I did
What's the first festival you went to?
like Flow Festival or just festival in general?
Just in general. Like, let's get back into your story a bit. When did you actually sort of discover poi and this type of thing? You were doing art, but when did this the flow community and stuff start to happen for you?
So I am a classic raver kid. That so
What's
I
that mean,
saw
raver kid? Like raves
I
and.
went to raves, yeah. So I used to be into metal music. My brothers are both heavy metal heads, and I had been going to concerts since I was younger. And then I went to my first desert rave. I'm from New Mexico, from the desert, and
But are there
it's
heavy
something.
metal raves? I thought that was just electronic. Is there actually
No, no, no.
heavy?
My brothers were heavy metal
I
heads, and
gotcha.
I grew up going to those shows. But then I remember going to my first rave and listening to electronic music, and that kind of switched me over.
I don't think there's much flowing going on in the mosh pits,
No.
You're swinging, try swinging your poi, and people are slamming into you.
No, none of that. But I had been a, I've yeah, I haven't been to a rock show in a while, but and I haven't been to a rave in a while. Started going to raves when I was about 14.
Okay,
Yeah,
right.
but then I was
Any
with
particular bands or music that the people in the rave scene would know? I mean, I don't know, but.
no, I remember DanceSafe was at my first rave, and it was actually called Celestial Sessions. It was a big desert. I remember the name of it. But then I had a group of friends, of male friends that were in the rave scene that were really into poi, and I was around them for a while, and I would just dance. I'd be like, oh, that's your thing. Like, anytime I tried it around them, I was like, no one's just like picks it up and is really good. So I was just like, kind of,
No.
yeah. So I was kind of
The
embarrassed.
word
And then about,
flailing comes to mind when you just pick them up for the first
oh
time.
yeah,
The word
flailing.
flailing.
I was really into flailing. But I was really into dancing. So, you know, like I would just, you know, watch them, and I was supportive of them. But I finally decided to go home and practice on my own. And yeah, once I started practicing on my own, I just kind of got a little addicted, and it turned into this thing I like to do by myself. I still prefer to this day juggling by myself or like practicing on my own. But then I went back and I was like, oh, look, I've been working on stuff. And they were like, oh, really? Oh, cool. Look, you're finally excited to start spinning. And I'm like, yeah. And then they taught me everything that they knew in like 3 months. So.
This was a group of dudes, because normally you think of poi, initially when I was first started poi, as sort of a very female activity.
Yeah. That's what a lot of yeah no it was yeah that was when Flow Lights first came out. Yeah, it was a group of five dudes and they would geek out on Poi like
And did you go through a glow stringing phase?
yeah, and that was like when Flow Lights first came out and I would do like bounces and raps. And then when I started spinning fire, I realized I couldn't do a lot of that stuff on fire, so then I started learning more like pattern spinning, but I had been spinning for about 8 months before I ever did fire.
Well, maybe you could talk about the different things you can, like from glow stringing or poi, the different kinds of poi. Like what? So, what are some of the things you can do with glow stringing? What is glow stringing exactly, and how is it different than poi?
So glow stringing is like a glow stick on a string, and I want to say it's like a mix between really intricate yo-yo tricks.
Right.
Honest, you do a lot of like kind of wraps around your body, around your arm. And poi is more like, like traditional New Zealand poi where it's more off body patterns. I don't know if you could explain that. Glow stringing kind of goes from like if you ever hear of freehand glow sticking, which is like something I used to do. Like you see those, those people that are still out there just like having a ball dancing with glow sticks in their hand.
Right, kind of like tracing shapes and
Yeah,
patterns.
around your body and like dancing. Like I did that for years. And that
Now,
was
is there
what I
any
was.
technique to that, or is it just kind of free form with the
Well,
glow
there's different
sticks?
glow sticks. I mean, there's definitely like a technique to there was like different styles of dancing. Like there still is. There's tectonic and there's liquid. Like you do tutting and then you put them on a string and then you start doing like, bounces on your knees and your arms. And like there's a lot of tangle work you can do and then kind of release out of it. It kind of reminds me of people if you wanted to come from like or see like really intricate yo-yo tricks or even Diablo with string techniques.
Yeah, it seems to me too that since the glow sticks are very thin, you do a lot more catching them in your hands.
Yeah,
A
you can
lot more
wrap
wraps and catches, yeah.
totally. And that was something I was really into is like you wrap them up into your hand and then you can go into like some free hand dancing and then unwrap them and then do a few point moves. That was definitely like the flow that I had when I first started.
I like them a lot. I think that also I just made a set myself with just some, Walmart glow sticks and some shoelaces.
Totally.
Yeah. It's surprising that some of the props you can make, like the glow stick, the glow stringing, or like tennis ball and can, people don't gravitate toward them, even though they're almost free. People would rather get, more expensive props, maybe.
Totally. I mean, you could always just get a tennis ball and some long socks from Walmart.
Exactly. Make some sock poi. Now, so what's the evolution? Like, was sock poi the first thing, or was it just more of the Maori poi, or how did it evolve over the years, the poi spinning?
See, I don't know the whole like true traditional
Right.
history.
From what you saw, from what you saw.
There was like the Maori poi, and then they went. I think it's just practice poi because I think a lot of the traditional poi spinners still use like practice versions versus fire. So
Right.
it's just different equipment basically. But I don't know. It really evolved into a lot of tech patterns all over, and there's no right or wrong how to do. You might find somebody who's like that's right or wrong, but really, you can get a prop and whatever you figure out what to do with it that's unique and interesting, go for it, So there's people all over the world at different times, like really going deep into different techniques of different patterns.
I just remember from my perspective, because I remember when poi first started, like at the IGA festivals, like you first saw people come in and do poi, and usually it was that ribbon poi, like they had like the comet poi.
Oh, yeah, that's like a veil poi.
Yeah, and it had like a long tail, which I
Yeah.
think gave it a good look, but then I think it limited as far as when people started getting to what they call the tech toy,
Yeah.
or tech poi, because when we first saw it, it was very much kind of a joke. It's like,
Yeah,
oh my God, what is that? Type
that's
of thing.
it's been a joke. It was for a long time, but like I even remember that too when I was first going to the IJA. It's really evolved over the years. It's definitely taken more seriously now.
But I think all of the so-called flow props have evolved. I think their smash up with juggling has sort of led them, almost all of them, into more of a combo flow juggling style. Like, look at Poi. Like juggling three poi when I first came out, that wasn't even in the picture.
No, I know. It's pretty difficult too. And which was interesting to me because it was like looked at as such a joke for so long, and I'm just like, it's so much harder.
Oh yeah, do like three poi versus three club. It must be super hard.
It's way harder. It's floppy. It's just, it's not static.
Now, are those contact poi, are those the best ones also for the juggling because they're heavier, or what makes a good set of juggling poi?
The stiffer the rope. Like the closer it is to more of a, like making it more of a static prop, the easier it is going to be for juggling. So it's like if the, if you have really floppy tethers, it's just going to be, more difficult.
Yeah,
But I mean,
nobody wants floppy tethers.
closer it is to a club, the easier it's going to be for juggling. And you can get poi sets that are pretty close. Like I've seen people with poi sets where their rope is literally like you see people that balance it with the knob.
Right.
And it's just like, I'm just like, and you pick it up, and it's like when it kind of bends over halfway through the tether. And I'm like, this is pretty much a club.
Yeah, it's a club with a sort of a flexible handle.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, this is a club that kind of looks like a poi. I don't know. So,
And what year do you think that the poi juggling kind of hit the scene for the first time? And do anybody in particular come to mind as the innovator of it?
So Keith Marshall was one of the first poi jugglers that really like brought it out into different parts of the world. Ronin is who actually made contact poi. Like he's the what we know of as the first person to put a ball on a string. And then Keith really got into poi juggling. And then I feel like it really took off in like I would say 2015-ish,
Yeah.
maybe 2014. It started really popping off, and that's when I was started with the poi juggling. And it was funny because I was never really I started as a poi spinner, right? And I had picked up staves, I picked up hoops, I had picked up fans, but I was still really like poi is my prop. So I didn't really I was one of those people that didn't really think juggling was cool because it's the American
Yeah.
society of like like circus isn't cool like it is in other countries or looked at as a profession or a serious profession. But yeah, the first time I saw somebody juggling poi, or I was just like, whoa, that is so cool. I need to do that. I dove into the poi juggling grind with really not so great of a setup for juggling. And they've gotten better now, the set that I use, but I've gone over to the static side lately and staves. And then last year was my first year of just only juggling clubs.
That's why I sense at Portland that you kind of had this mad passion for clubs now, that everything has sort of led you there.
Yeah, I mean, I've been one of those, I've been trying to fight the diving, and that's what everyone's been telling me for years. And I'm like, no, I'm gonna fight it. I'm gonna fight it because I was really into poi and I wanted to do something more unique because like clubs have been around for,
Yeah.
forever. And it's so developed. And then I like wanted to stick with something to make me feel like I'm creating something new, which is it's not really like new tricks and new that and that when it's coming from mostly from clubs over to poi, but doing it with a different prop. So I stuck with the poi juggling for a long time, and then I went to staves, and it's the same thing where it's a lot of the my staff juggling stuff is a lot of like club juggling, but with a different prop.
Well, I think that's one thing about juggling nowadays is you can see a lot more connection between the props.
Yeah,
And
it's all
if you learn
connected.
something like poi and you learn the different directions and the spins and anti-spins, you go, wait a minute. And they had this one thing though, the spintegration was a term I heard at the Club Congress. I get, which was not really my scene, I got to admit. It was too club oriented. I went to Club Congress this year and you were there too, but you didn't see me there very much. I came and went.
Yeah, I saw you. I think that's Matt Hall's thing, the spintegration.
Well, it's a good term because when you see someone like a Jeremiah Johnson juggle, and you see the combination of the club swinging, the juggling, the poi, the different kinds of contact that we never had with clubs before, it's become a much more hybrid type of juggling than we had when I started out.
And yeah, and definitely. And then and they're all integrated. Like if you get a poi, a staff, and a club, and you land them all next to each other, they're all same but different. So it's just they
Yeah.
all the tricks will transfer over in different ways. They all have a rotation with clubs. That's why a lot of people are always like, oh, it's the ultimate prop. And I was like, you can spin it like a poi. You can
Yeah.
do a lot of the pattern stuff like you can with stabs and then throw it like a club. So that with my style with clubs has definitely been, all the year, like all my poi spinning and then all my staff work. That all transfers. I do most of the same tricks with most of all the props anyways. All those three props at least.
And if right now you had to pick just one prop, if they said, okay, you only get one prop, would you go back to poi? Would you stick with the clubs? What would that one prop be?
That would be super
That's
hard. That'd
a
be
tough one.
so mean.
I know.
I mean, right now it would be clubs because that's mostly what I've been juggling, but I would be really sad.
Well, it's tough because if someone asked me now, I might think, well, now I'm really into this.
Yeah.
But if you'd asked me 2 months ago, I'd have been like, oh, I was really into that.
And I go into really phases with everything. So there's time, like, especially if I'm working on, there's plateaus with, learning anything, and it's easy to hit plateaus within certain tricks or style of tricks or whatever. And then you get really frustrated and you're like, oh, I'm really trying to get this trick. But then it's nice to go to something else, another prop and a whole other style that feels really like driven into your muscle memory. And it's like, wow, this is such a relaxing feeling.
And how do you feel about the transition? Let's say you're doing raves and you're just having a lot of fun and you're flowing with the music and you're with your friends. And at what point do you think I want to take that next step and like perform, like be in front of people, having them watch just me and kind of take that next step? Was that something that just sort of happened naturally, or did you have to, did you see that was sort of part of your tendency initially anyways to be a performer?
No, I'm the opposite of that. See, I was always a art school like person. I was not a theater. I was in the art club. So
Okay,
so
right.
it's like I'm one of those people, like I grew up doing art shows where it's like, oh, look, I'm standing over here in the corner watching people look at my work from
Right.
afar. And oh, they look really interested. I'm gonna go talk to them. That's my jam. And I'm still like that. I still like do vending of my art at festivals and stuff. But I was never a theater kid. I never got into it thinking like, oh, I want to be a performer. And that's something that I've had to learn to like, basically. And I don't do gigs all the time. I do them like super part-time. I spend more time working on design and art, way more now than I do working on shows or acts for shows. But I do work on choreo, but it's very much not. I like unique things like, oh, this is a little different, or showcases, but I've had to push through the barriers to really like it. And I've had a lot of people shoving it up my face, like, just for years, just like, you need to be a performer. You need to be a performer. And I'm like, I don't need to do anything.
Right. Well, it's flattering because I think they see you have the potential. Maybe that's
Totally.
why they're saying that,
Yeah,
but
no, it's true. But everyone gets into it for different reasons. Like, there's a lot of people that will get into it just to be a performer. And they work on certain tricks that are for the audience versus like, oh, I'm like my technique or what I go into is looking for newer tricks or how, it's like painting a painting with techniques I came up with, basically making my own art piece. Then again, it's a lot of the times people work on art and they put it, behind their other paintings that never see anyone else, and they just sit in their studio. So there's a lot of things that I work on that I just, maybe Skillshare with someone and show it, or not even put it in an act, but
but it does seem to me that you're very interested in the aesthetics of it, like your body movement and the overall. Because some people who juggle, they see it just as an activity where it's basically hands and arms. They're just basically juggling while standing in a pretty static position. But
Totally.
maybe it's because you came from this rave sort of dance
Yeah,
scene that your juggling has a
totally.
very dance style. Yeah.
100%. And I still like I was really into dance for a very long time before I still am. Like I did belly dancing and I was in a troupe for a little while and I was like super into dancing, still am. Lots of grid work stuff and yeah, they're like attachments to your hand. They're like your paintbrushes for your painting and then your body is just kind of like the way you're moving your brush,
Yeah.
And that's how I see it. So it's extensions of your body. It's not just doing a trick.
Any particular poi artists were inspirational to you when you started? Were you able to watch like YouTube videos and get like heroes in the that you could look up to, or who inspired you when you were starting out besides the dudes you were hanging
Yeah, I was gonna say it was the
with?
dudes that I was hanging out with for sure. But I didn't have anyone that I was like, I had a computer, but I didn't watch a lot of, it was before I had a smartphone. I didn't watch too many videos. It was more people that I like met in person.
Okay.
basically. So it was those dudes. And then when I moved to Southern California, I met another group of dudes.
Yeah, you went to college in San Diego, correct?
Yes, and went, and that's where I got my media design degree.
And did you ever go to Balboa Park and see the jugglers down in Balboa Park when you were in San Diego?
Yeah, I used to go to the juggling club there.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Who was out there at that time?
You know, it was
Any
so long
names so
ago.
long ago?
It was a lot. I should remember.
When I was there, it was like Kit Summers and
I think I know Kit.
this guy Dan Wiles was down
Oh yeah, I
there.
know Dan Wiles.
Yeah,
Yeah, and
it was quite a
yeah.
scene. Me and Barry, lived in L.A. and occasionally we would drive down to San Diego on the weekends
Oh, fun.
and
Yeah, I
sleep
did.
on Kit's floor. And
Yeah, they did have a website, and I remember they used to move where the location, the meetup spot was. But that was also when I was like still new to juggling, so I had only went to the juggling club a few times. So they used to have a fire jam on Wednesday that I was like an avid.
right.
I yeah. They I didn't come up with it, and it's still going on, but there's no like host that makes the event pages. It was the Ocean Beach Flow Jam.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I hosted that for a solid 3 years, and it used to, you know, I used to promote it, this and that, and we'd get like good like 70 people that would come.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
All
and then when
right.
I was out of town, I would make the event page, and I would take my block rockers and pop up to whoever's hosting the event, and I was really into
Your
that.
block rockers? Is that what you
A
said?
block rocker, it's like the boom box.
Oh, okay. I never heard that block rocker. I never heard that term.
Yeah, that's like a boom box for music.
Oh, that's funny. So since you have a foot in both like the juggling community and the flow community, you're at a flow festival or a juggling festival. Like how do you know? Like what are some of the key differences? As soon as you walk in, you're like, oh, this is juggling, this is flow.
I would say you could see who, if there's an inside space, you know that it was like juggler organizers.
Right.
But you
Okay.
go to a lot of like flow festivals nowadays and they don't prioritize an inside space. There's like all those you juggle long enough and you're like, oh, I don't want to battle the wind and I don't want
Right,
my,
right,
you know,
right.
and I don't want to
Yeah.
my props getting super dirty all the time. And so there's definitely that.
I like that one Mops, the one Marvin Ong put on.
Mops. Yeah, I loved Mops.
Because he had a good indoor space. I think he kind of, once again, sort of had a foot in each camp.
Totally. Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah, I wish he kept throwing that with the gym and then the, you know, like the fire circle and all that. So, but yeah, no, inside space, prioritize that is more of.
I mean, can you look at people and go, flow artist, juggler?
Well,
Could
see, and now,
you?
I mean, you could, but
You could before, maybe. Now it's a little bit different.
now it's like you go to a lot of the flow festivals and a lot of everyone's juggling. Like a lot of the workshops that are hosted are like juggling with different props. So, you know, it's the blend is happening. It's been a gradual gradient, but you know, they're starting to mush together to make this new.
Is there a resistance? Are people resisting? Like, oh no,
Oh,
the
there's
jugglers are coming, or.
Well, there's still a lot of people that resist juggling. I know a lot of spinners that still don't like juggling, and I'm like, fine, you know, juggling multiple props. By definition, one object manipulation is juggling. So spinners that think that they are not jugglers, in my opinion, are still jugglers.
So you're under the school of poi is juggling, hula hoop is juggling. Are
Yeah.
you in that camp?
I'm in that camp. I'm in the camp of like object manipulation is juggling. Like if you
I
look it
guess
up.
I'm on the other side. I'm like, hula hoops is hooping is hooping. I
You're a
think
whole cat
cigar boxes
juggling.
is cigar boxes. To me, juggling is only the activity of actually tossing things and catching them. Like when you're like you can juggle poi, you can juggle cigar boxes, you can juggle Diablos.
Yeah.
But that's the activity of actually juggling them, like when you're doing three Diablos on the string.
Yeah.
Like to me, when someone's doing Diablo, to me they're doing Diablo.
Yeah. When they're doing one Diablo, but not
Yeah,
three.
when someone says, "Is that guy juggling?" Or, no, he's doing Diablo.
Fair. And like, you know, I think there's a lot of people that go into their times where they're
But I'm old,
really, yeah,
so
see, where they're really opinionated. I'm like, if you want to believe that, you believe that, whatever.
I'm into everything. Like I
Yeah.
love everything. I love like pen spinning, but I wouldn't
Totally.
say pen spinning is juggling.
Yeah, and see, that's I guess that's everyone's opinion.
See, I converted you with that one sentence, and pen spinning is not juggling. You're like, oh, yeah, he's right. Pen spinning is not juggling. So if that's not juggling, why is Diablo juggling?
I would think pen spinning is juggling. Kaboom!
Oh, no, I think they all share a common core.
Yeah.
Like any kind of object manipulation shares a common desire to manipulated objects or a series of objects creatively.
Yeah.
I just grew up thinking that juggling was the act of,
The throwing.
And if someone said they were a juggler, to me that meant they were a professional juggler.
Ah, see, and that's another whole
Yeah.
topic.
That got me in trouble too, because I met a guy and he's like, "I'm a juggler." I go, "Oh, I have this job." He goes, "Oh, I don't work." But I'm a, I go, "Oh, then you're not a juggler."
Yeah, you
And he got
don't you
very
don't
offended at that. I don't blame him, because looking back, I'm like, well, that was kind of a limited thought I had. But
Yeah.
to me, it's like a job title, like a
Yeah,
baker.
right? Do you send in a 1099?
No, it's like a race car driver. Like, oh, I'm a race car driver. Like, oh, where do you race? Oh, just around my house, on the streets around
Yeah.
my. If I
Totally,
see
yeah.
someone on the road, I'll drag race them.
I mean,
Oh.
I still get that too. I'm like, oh, I do performances, and then there's people like, oh, yeah, where are you in the circus? Like, where do you? And I'm
Well,
like, very, I'm
that's
like
a
very,
very traditional, yeah.
yeah. And I'm like,
We do my kids' party for $50, kind of.
yeah. I'm like, I'm a very casual performer. I work on acts, and I'm very picky on where I show them.
But I imagine that it's when you start to think about making a living, that being a flow artist is even more difficult than being a juggler. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, I think it's more for sure because it's not as well known. Like everyone know, not everyone, but like a lot of most people know, oh, a jug, they hire a juggler. Club juggling is a lot more like common versus like, oh, poi. It's like, oh, who's
Right.
gonna, no one's gonna, corporate events are gonna be like, oh, look, we got to get some poi spinners in here,
Like, where are all the comedy poi spinners at? We have comedy
Yeah.
jugglers.
No, yeah, comedy jugglers, that's like, been around for a long time. So, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I don't think we have many comedy flow artists. I can't
No,
think of
there's
any per se.
not quite so popular.
Not quite so popular.
No.
Now, when did you start becoming more like travel oriented, starting going to festivals? What was the first big juggling and what was the first big flow festivals you went to?
Oh, I don't even know what the first big okay, so I went to MOPS, then I went to Fire Drums. I remember going to my first EJC, my first IJA.
Where was your first AJC? Where was it located?
It was in Poland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was my first EJC.
That's quite a commitment, though, right? I mean, for a hobby or for an activity to go, I'm going to Poland.
Totally. I think it was for me, it's like I also did, I always tell people it's like, the community is a beneficial part of it. Like there's a lot of people that got into, oh, they're into the art and they're like really community oriented. My close friends that got me into spinning were some of my closest friends from moving away from where I'm from is how I've made friends ever since then. So it's been 15 years of like, oh, you're j juggler, spinner, this and that. Like this, now we're, I see you as someone I want to hang out with.
Well, it's a good entry, right? It's a good community of people, like especially if you move somewhere new and they have a flow jam. You have this shared activity and you're very skilled, so I'm sure people sort of gravitate towards that as well. A good way to make friends.
Yeah, it's a good way
Yeah.
to connect with people. And then it's fun to connect with people all over the world. And now that technology is so advanced and we can just share videos of each other and then comment on each other's videos, and then there you build little relationships with people you've never met through the internet of like, oh, we're talking about these tricks that we both work on, blah 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 blah. And then you meet them in person for the first time, and there's that. So
And you did an IJA Tricks of the Month video. Is that something they contacted you for? And how, I mean, there's things that you've done, like the shirt and now this IJA Tricks of the Month. Is this something you made happen, or did they reach out to you?
different things. So I've been involved in different ways. So sometimes I've gotten reached out for, they have different directors every year. But yeah, I've been involved with them for a while, I think since 2017. But I don't know if I've ever really offered. I've gotten reached out for. So that's really nice.
Well, you did the show in 2023. What prompted you? I don't think I was there that
I
year.
did poi. Yeah, I was in the I did want to work on a different act, but they wanted poi for the Cascade of Stars. So that was an old act, which was really nice that I don't think I'll do it again, but it went pretty well and that was fun. So yeah, I did an almost 10-year-old poi act.
Well, that's good though. Sometimes you want to
Yeah.
go to these things where you're performing for jugglers and have something in your pocket, right? You want to feel like, okay, I can do this.
Yeah. And I think they wanted to have different props in the show, so it's like they wanted poi representation, so
And are you planning to do any performing this year at different festivals?
yeah, I mean, I'm working on a club act. I'm actually performing at the IJA as well with the In the Flow show.
Nice.
And
Okay.
I'm going to be, my club style is very flowy.
Yeah.
So it's, a lot of my acts are the same. It's a little, well, not same, but like a lot of dancing and
Well, you have your style.
my style. Yeah, they're my style. So it's like so it's a club act.
Like even your style at the festivals is very unique. Like the way you dress
Yeah, totally.
is very unique. Like you told me you only dress in black and white.
I
Is
do.
that accurate?
It is. Except for I got rid of all my casual colored clothes a long time ago, but now I do have some performance outfits that are still colored. Yeah, it's a thing with the branding too. I'm into branding. I do branding and advertising design, but also this once you choose a color and just stick with that color, then all your stuff matches. Have you ever thought
Right.
about that?
Well, so that would be your advice if someone is listening to this, wants to work on their branding, that even the color scheme can be part of it.
Oh yeah. I mean, colors are very important when it comes to branding. It's like you don't want to, yeah, you want to pick your one to maybe three colors, and then you don't want to change that.
Interesting. So why did you choose black and white?
I started, it was a slow progression, honestly. Like I just really liked the black and white contrast look, and then I just started buying more and more black and white stuff, and then I realized most of my clothes were black and white, and then I was like, well, I'm just gonna go with this, and everything is gonna be
I
black and white.
like to do that because I have terrible fashion sense. I like the idea of like, okay, I have this color pants and this color shirt, and that's gonna be it.
Yeah, and it's nice now because now I can just stick my hand in my closet and pull out like a handful of things and they'll all match.
Yeah, that's very good. And so when you perform too, that becomes part of it, is that when you perform, you're gonna stick with the black and white motif.
And I'm, and I like silver. I don't like bronze, so it's like a lot of black and white things have like bronze embellishments or just, and I like the metal parts, so I still go with silver. But yeah.
And which jugglers do you see or florists who you think, why, they have a good brand? Anybody stand out as like someone who has that kind of cohesive understanding of who they are and is able to put it across in this way that really brands them?
A flow artist.
Or a juggler? I mean, anybody you can think of that we could look as an example of, wow, that's good branding.
Oh, now I'm like, that's like tell a
Well, I
joke,
mean,
and you're like, oh.
well, no, but you might think of jugglers, and jugglers, they have like their own like a catchphrase or something that kind of sums them up. But I'm wondering if anyone have really thought about their costuming that much.
No, I don't either. The first thing that came to mind was like companies that have, I feel like, really
Right.
good branding, but like as a performer, it's not
What would
so.
go into it? So costuming would go into it. Obviously, the choice of props would go into it.
Totally.
The type of font you use, I guess, and the type of imagery you use, is all
Yeah.
part of your branding.
It's supposed to all be cohesive. And see, and I do a lot of branding for like a lot of companies and for jugglers, so it's like I pay attention to my own kind of, it's just like ingrained in me to pay attention to my own branding. I don't even like have to, oh, that's off brand and I don't want it.
Right, right,
It's
right.
just like I already know, like I only want this because it's gonna, fat or match my aesthetic. So it's like I don't even have to think about it. But it's something that I kind of shove down my clients' throats. Like you need to think about your, does this match? Is this off? No, you can't do that.
Well, I think it's different in that when you see like someone doing it professionally or in a professional setting, we don't have a lot of information about that in our field. Like there's not really a professional juggler's school or anything like that. It's a lot
No,
of
there's not.
figure it out as you go kind of deal.
Yeah. No, there's really not.
What prevents you from trying to be like a full-time performer? Have you felt that's not the direction you want to go? Is that too much pressure, or do you like the mix of having like a regular job or the graphic arts and other jobs, and then have the juggling to be more casual and the flow stuff more part-time?
So, a lot of people have asked me this, and I know so many spinners and jugglers and people that are really into their practice and then they make it their full-time thing. I had somebody say this to me recently. They're like, "What hobby do you want to start hating by making it your
Oh,
full-time job?"
that's funny. That's a good way to
And
put it.
yeah,
Yeah.
somebody said that to me recently and I was like, "Oh, that's pretty good." And it's just like I've done this with the art thing and the design like getting art jobs. And you get to the point where it becomes your full-time job and you have to do it. And
Right.
then you almost dislike it because it's like, oh, I got it. Sometimes, even if days you don't want to do it, you're like, oh, I have to do it. And I have had times where I take on a decent amount of gigs in a shorter amount of time. And I'm working on having to work on acts and this and that, and it takes away from my own personal practice that I rather enjoy. I really enjoy. And so when I'm doing my own personal practice, I will feel bad and I'll feel like I can't enjoy it as well because I'm like, oh, I should be working on this act. I should be working on this and this and that. And so then it's just like, no. I don't want to clutter my own personal creativity within the art form by making it my full-time gig. So I casually like taking gigs as much as I want to. I like working on different kinds of art within, like, even just, like working on, like I said, I'm working on the IJ shirt and working on different circus companies logos and this and that, and just working on my own personal art. And then, still doing a little dipping my toes in all the different areas within the art form, which is, gigs, workshops, organizing, making art, just to mix it up. And then plus I have my other, I've been bartending for 15 years. So that's like, that's a lot of just like chit chatting with people.
Yeah, that's a good steady moneymaker.
Yeah, it's a steady money maker for sure, and I make good money doing that. And it's an easy, it's not so much of like I spend a lot of my time really pushing through creative barriers, trying to create something new within different styles of art that I do with like drawing and making things and coming up with new tricks or new styles. And then that can get, you can feel like your creative energy is drained for the day. And then I can go and make money by casual chit chatting with people, get tips. So.
Plus, that's a good skill. Like a good showbiz skill is what they call schmoozing.
Oh, I'm so into schmoozing.
Well, as a bartender, you're like
Yeah.
almost a professional schmoozer.
Totally. That's funny because I've had a lot of like my wittiness isn't like when I'm in that when I'm in that element and I'm busy, I've had so many people tell me they're like, you should be a comedian. And I'm like, ah, blah 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 blah. But it's funny because the busier I get, I feel like the wittier I get.
Sure, sure.
And people love to tip for like you make someone laugh and especially over and over, and they will really hook it up with the tips. So,
Well, in bartending, like juggling, it's
a
a
form of entertainment.
form of entertainment. And
Yeah, it is.
the more you get people to like you, whether you're an entertainer or a bartender, if they like you and they want to give to you something in return for this feeling that you've given them of feeling good or feeling happy
You're
for that
giving them an
moment.
experience, just like you're
Yeah.
giving, as an entertainer, you're giving the audience an experience. They bought a ticket to go see you, and then if they liked you, they'll buy another ticket to go see you again. But the same thing with bartending, it's like you're paying for the experience, like whether it be like they want to sit there and vent to you about their day, whatever they want to talk about, you make them laugh, you make them, you want to talk about whatever they want to talk about, or and give them good service, a good experience, and they tip you well. Like I've made good money everywhere that I've bartended for that reason, because I know I'm it's that's the that I call it the hustle, but that's the hustle, and that's also like I know that's what I'm serving them is an experience for good tips.
Well, I've always had the advice to a lot of performers, sort of like take care of your day-to-day and then have a chance to swing for the fences. Because a
Yes.
lot of people, they become performers and they're just struggling and they're just not being, they're broke and they're having tension because they
Yeah.
can't afford this or that. And sometimes I think they make that transition too soon. So having like
Totally.
a not taking the worry of money a little bit off your back. And also this idea, like when you're practicing, like you were saying, it's one thing to practice for your own personal fun and like your own just creative urges to go wherever they want. But as soon as you think, can I perform this? Will people like this? Is this doable? It really limits what you how I feel about juggling, because I just know sometimes I'm doing something that feels really good to me, then I'll watch it like on video and go, oh, it feels a lot better than it looks. It doesn't seem to
Yeah.
be entertaining.
Yeah.
So.
And then that's the whole, go like focusing on what you're telling the audience. Are you performing for them? Are you performing for yourself? It's like the, I'm just working on what I need to, what I'm doing, what feels good to me. Do you want to show it? So that's like another, creating an act is a whole different thing than practicing for yourself.
Yes, I mean, I go through this stage where to me it goes like this. It goes, practice, learn tricks, develop sequences, put together a routine, and then perform. Like that's like the way it goes organically.
Yeah.
Like, and then you get to a point where like, oh, if I'm not performing, then why am I doing this kind of? Like, what's the ultimate goal?
A lot of people have gone through that, and that's where a lot of people end up, I feel like, quitting. And I feel like they end up putting pressure on themselves, like they need to do something with it. But it's like, as you tell people that there's people that go on a morning run or a morning bike ride every day for their whole lives. And it's like, no one's put pressure on them to be, it's like, no one's pressuring them to become like, a long distance mountain biker or like be in
Hey,
competitions.
when do you start competing? Like,
Yeah,
wait a
when do
minute,
you, yeah, no,
I'm a
totally.
jogger. I don't need to compete.
Yeah, no, exactly. It's like, no, it's like you don't have to put pressure on yourself for everything that you do to be make it professional. And I feel like a lot of people do that. And then that's when they end up quitting because then they get so much pressure in their mind where it's like, I mean, you could do anything for, you can practice for 5 minutes to 2 hours to 4 hours. Even 20 minutes a day is nothing out of your day that you want to do whatever you want to do. Breathing exercises, yoga. You're not going to have to go be a yoga teacher if you do yoga every day for 20 minutes, So I feel like people do that too much.
Or they become the way where I've talked to quite a few people where they have their act, they're good professionals, and they go, I hate to admit it, but I never practice. I never juggle unless I'm at a job.
Yeah, and that's, and I feel like there are people that made it their job and then they lose the fun out of it. And that's why I've been too worried about making it my full-time job.
Well, so you have a good balance, and I know you're really into practice and practice techniques. Like what's the kind of a regimented practice look like for you? Do you try to do the same amount every day? Is it vary? How do you approach your practice?
So lately, I've been working a lot lately at my bartending job. I'm a bar manager actually. Earlier today, we're getting a new system. So I've been on my computer today trying to, put every, anyways, lately I've been doing an hour. I do an hour of timed practice a day where it's like I start my timer,
That's good, yeah.
which an hour isn't that long out of like a
No, but
whole,
I like the idea of the timer. Like,
yeah,
me, I'm big on the timer, so
yeah,
I
that's
think
what we,
that's
I
a good
remember we
one.
talked about that. I'm a big timer person too. I started
Yeah.
timing my practices probably about 5 years ago. It was because I remember I had one practice session where I was like really just like feeling it. I was like, and I was like out of breath. And I was just like, man, that must have been like an hour. And I looked at my phone and it was like 15 minutes. And I was like, and I was just like, what? And I was like, that felt like so long. So I don't know. I just like, there's so many people that tell me they're like, oh, I practice for this many hours a day. And I'm like, do you
I
really?
know, exactly. I mean, I practice so much. Like, well, how much per day? Well, like a couple hours a day. Well, maybe not a couple hours.
Yeah, they'll be like 3 or 4 hours. I was like, have you ever
It's
timed yourself for 4 hours of
more like
active
20 minutes, exactly.
practicing? Like, it's a lot of, that's a long time. Like, I'm really avid about my timer. Like, I pause it when I'm gonna take a drink of my coffee.
Oh, that's more than I do. Yeah, I give myself a little slack.
No, I don't. I'm like a weird, I literally pause the button. It's active juggling to me.
Right.
So like if I do an hour, I do an hour and 10 minutes to make up with for drops.
Interesting. Yeah. I try to keep it pretty accurate. And if I do take a break, I'll do a little longer to make up for it because I want
Yeah.
it to be. Now I work in the process of 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 45, or an hour. Do you ever choose an hour your goal, or how do you break up that hour?
Kind of just, so what I do is I end up, I just want to get, no, I'm a big schedule person. Like I work really well on a schedule. I'm like an every day I have a schedule. I make up my schedule for, I make weekly schedules, monthly schedules, yearly schedules. So I don't know. I just like to feel like I got a significant amount of practice in, and I've changed up the time. I was doing 2 hours for most of the year last year, but then now that I've been working so much and I've been going to the gym a lot and working on all these other projects, 2 hours a day is just like I can't do it. It's just like I don't have time for it. Like I work, some 6 to 8 hour shifts, and then I go to the gym, and then I'm working on all these other projects. It's like 2 hours is just, I can't, like, I need to sleep and cook. So that's where I'm at right now with my schedule is an hour.
You ever break out some juggling tricks or stuff at the bartending? Is that ever,
Everyone
those
does
worlds ever
that.
collide or
No,
no?
it's funny because I'll tell jugglers that I'm a bartender, and then they'll be like, oh, you must do flair. And I'm like, and then I tell muggles or like people sitting at the bar, the same thing. Oh, I'm a juggler. They'll be like, oh, do you do flair? It's like that is actually something that you could probably like besides club juggling, they'd say, but no, I've never done flair. I like to keep it separate.
Oh,
I
I like
don't.
flair. I think the problem with flair, though, is the working flair versus the performing flair is different.
Well, and that's the thing is I've never worked anywhere where they want me flipping their expensive bottles.
Yeah, and
But
if the bottle only has to have a very small amount of alcohol, or the alcohol gets wasted.
no, totally. And then that we do actually have flair practice equipment in our studio, but
Oh, nice.
to me, bartending isn't so much like that kind of show. To me, it's conversating with people and the schmoozing part. And making a drink and this and that, but it's more of like chit-chatting. So it gets very separated from my object manipulation practice. Like, I do most of my creative stuff in the morning. So like I said, when all my creative juices are used up for the day and I'm just
Right.
like, okay, I feel like I'm creatively drained. And it's usually that's by the time it's time for me to go to my night job.
Oh, that makes sense. I did one bartending job when I when the bar, the movie Bart no t Cocktail came out with Tom Cruise, and I was a struggling juggler at that point. I don't think I was a Raspini brother or anything like that. So I took bartending classes, and I thought I'll become a flair bartender. And I did one bartending job, and I was doing some tricks, and they were not into it at all. This guy goes, "Hey, if you want more of a tip, just make my drink a little bit stronger. Knock off all the nonsense." I'm like,
And
"Oh."
see, and that's the thing. There's like a place for everything. Like
Exactly.
if there's like specific like a, I think there's I don't know the name of it. There's a specific bar in Vegas where you go to go see flair, and that's what they want.
Yeah. Exactly.
And that's what you're going to see. It's like a show. But most people, when they sit down at a bar, is they want to chit chat. They want to like, they want the schmoozing. They want the laughs. They want like to see what you have as a person that's going to entertain them, not like what you can do with your fancy bottle skills.
I think you also have to know, like, when it's about them,
Yeah, and that's
right?
usually what it is too. Like the there's different like that's why I call it the game, and that's why I tell people
Yeah.
it's like it is. It's a form of entertainment, and it's a way of conversating with people to run with whatever topic they want to talk about, and then you run from there. You know what I mean? So it's like you
Yeah.
conversated with them about whatever they wanted to talk about at the time.
I think people want you to feel like they're interesting. Like they want the bartender to feel like, wow. They feel like I'm interesting. They don't want to be like the bartender's like, "Hey, let me tell you what I want to talk about."
Well, I mean, sometimes people want that too. So it's
Do
like, yeah,
they?
it's all about reading the room and like,
Right.
filling out
Hey,
the vibe.
watch me do these tricks. Watch me do these tricks. Like, no
I
thanks.
mean, I've definitely had a lot of people that just want to hear about me. And then they're like, wow,
Okay.
you're a really interesting person. I'm like, yeah, I am. And then, so it's whatever they, whatever the conversation starter, and then really running with the conversation starter. And then you can go off topic. I've been going deep into the like how AI is going to take over the world conversations.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my own rant that I'll go deep into.
Yeah, my rant is always how holographs are going to take over the entertainment world and how we're all
Holograms.
going to be at the mercy of holograms in another 10 years.
Interesting.
Like cruise ship jugglers. Like, oh, there used to be so many cruise ship jugglers. Now they have a holographic theater on the ship,
I can see that.
and you do your show once and they just take it on the ship, and then you're just getting paid, for your act. Or they create it just virtually. And there's no person in it at all, and they
No,
just never have to pay anybody.
yeah, that is
So,
like the future. That
yeah.
totally,
And whenever I see it, it's like, oh, this person, Whitney Houston's coming back as a hologram, or this person's a hologram, or I'm like, okay, here it comes.
Yeah.
Here come the holograms.
I always,
So.
I've been telling people like, Japan's been or China's been ahead of the game for a long time when it comes to the restaurant business, where it's like you go in and you sit down at tables and then you just like type in a computer what you want to eat and it comes out on a chute. Pew!
Yeah.
And it's like that's why I've
Yeah,
been telling people I'm like the future of bartending is gonna be you're gonna go sit at the bar and then you're gonna have chat GBT to talk to you
I
while you order your drink.
mean, I think that's the way we're going, isn't it? The
I
way
mean,
that just
I
the
could,
the
I yeah, I'll go off on all kinds of AI rants about the future of AI. We don't need to get into that now. I'm about to go to
No.
work in 2 or 3 hours. I'll start a whole new.
Let me ask you one more work question, though. One more bartending question. How hard is it to cut people off? Like, if they've had too much to drink. Are you the one that has to say, like, "Hey, I'm going to cut you off"? And
It's different. I would say it's different places that I've worked. There's been some
right.
places that I've worked where like a manager has to cut you off. Where I work now, I am the manager. So
Right.
I cut people off. But you know, where I work right now is I don't want to say I overserve people, but it is at a hotel, so it's like it's more.
Right. That's better because you don't have to worry about them driving or
Yeah,
something
actually
like that.
morally I feel a lot better because I know they're not going to go get in their car and drive off. So it's just like, you know. But you know, I'd hold my own and I definitely will tell someone off. Some places that I've
Yeah.
worked, you're not allowed to do that. You know, so it's the person that
Sure,
has
sure,
to,
sure.
the manager has to go tell them off. Where I work now, I've told a number of people off. Or it's
Well,
like,
people they change, right? They come in, they're all good, they've had a
yeah.
few drinks, and all of a sudden they're not so good anymore.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, you know, it is what it is. So yeah, I
Let's
had
talk about another kind of job. Let's say you could have any, I didn't mean to cut you off, but let's say you have any kind of juggling job you could have or flow job. What would be the perfect scenario for you if someone hires you? Like, what do you really like to do when it comes to a performing job?
my favorite performing job is ambient juggler.
Okay, I can see that. That's a good one.
Which is like you're getting paid to practice basically and kind of just smile and do small interactions.
Yeah, a little schmoozing, a
Yeah,
little
just a little
schmoozing.
schmoozing here and there, but then I'm just like working on my stuff. It's not like you're not like too much focused on me. You're still going about what you want to do. You
Right.
know, you're gonna go get some hors d'oeuvres over there. And then, you know, come maybe look at me for a second, walk by, but I still know I'm getting paid. It's not like busking where it's like I'm trying to really like get you over here to put some money in my hat.
Yeah, those can be tough. I did one for a New Year's thing. Sometimes it's just too small. Like they have too few people and they want you there for too long.
Oh, for the ambient juggler?
Yeah,
Oh,
and
I've
you're like,
definitely
well,
been in some awkward situations with those style of gigs for sure.
yeah,
Where
it's like,
it's like, do you really need, like, no one's paying? The worst part is when no one's paying attention to you, and then you just get these looks, like you're just kind of like, why are they over there?
I know, you're thinking, I'm getting paid. The reason I'm here is I'm getting paid.
I'm doing, yeah, pretty much. I'm like, I'm doing my block over here, my time slot, like.
Yeah, I mean, it could be really fun. It could feel like, wow, I'm getting paid for nothing, just practicing.
Totally, and
Or it could be like, oh, this is so boring and so
yeah, but
arduous.
I mean, in some, yeah, depending on the situation. But then also, if you're thinking about it, you're like, hey, I'm kind of getting paid to practice right now.
I got paid to do a juggling workshop for like with a, I don't really do workshops. And
Yeah.
this guy goes, "Hey, will you help me with this workshop? You know, teach people to juggle for an hour." I'm like, "Sure." Boy, that was easy. I like that. I'm like, "Yeah,
Yeah.
maybe I should get into that." Like,
Yeah, no,
but
it's fun.
then teaching beginners to juggle is kind of, I don't know, gets boring.
Yeah, totally, it can. I have a workshop on practice techniques and just, you know,
Okay.
intro juggling, and I'll go on a lot of tangent rants, which are fine and helpful, but you know, it can get kind of tedious. And I don't know, I haven't really done too much private lessons to.
Now, this was for a company. This was for a group, and it was like a you know, it's like a break in their day of activities. And here's an hour where they're gonna learn to juggle, and you know, so stand like this and hold your hands like this.
Yeah,
And
totally.
but they paid me for it, so I'm like, all right, I'll do that.
Yeah, no, it's nice. I could see how it could get. That's why I'm like the whole mixing things up kind of situation, what I was saying. Like, I mix things, like, my day is just like, I never just do wake up and do too many. I don't know. I couldn't have just one job. I like having different things to do. It keeps me motivated. I'm always doing stuff. It's like once I'm kind of burnt out on this one thing, then I kind of just switch it up to something else.
And do you have goals for this year? Any particular desires in your performing or the festivals? Like, what festival's next? What comes up next?
I'm going to Cascade Juggling in
Oh, Seattle.
Seattle. I went last year.
How's that one? Is that a pretty good festival? Small?
It's smaller. It's a startup this year. I'll probably have more people, but I like the Bellingham vibes. And then I'm gonna go visit Portland for a little while. I'm gonna be working the next 4 months and doing a lot of grinding. I'm working on this act. I'm just gonna make it nice and solid. I got some commission art that I'm working on. I'm working on some other creative projects. Been going to the gym, hustling up a bunch of money. And then yeah. So just keep it going. I'm eventually trying to buy a house, so there you go with
Okay.
that. But
Here in the Bay Area, or because right now
no.
you live at the
I
Vulcan,
do live at the
right?
Vulcan, and it's grungy, and I want to live.
But explain to my listeners what the Vulcan is, because the Vulcan's a pretty unique artist community here in Oakland.
It is. It's a live-in workspace artist community, and I have a studio. I have a little gym. I have multiple little artist workspaces, and my rent is very cheap, but sounds beautiful and like a dream, but it's also in like the hood hood.
It's in Oakland.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
It's in
terrible.
the warehouse district of yeah. Well, there's good and
I've been
bad.
there quite a few times. It's like, where are we going to park around here? This is
Yeah.
really.
I mean, there's some really like Oakland's night and day when it comes to the neighborhood. Like you'll be driving down one road and it's just these $1 million
Yeah.
homes and there's no trash anywhere and everyone's lawns are kept up and then it's like the next street's just homeless encampment. But
But the Vulcan is neat because a lot of talented performers have come through there. They have good practice spaces. There's a community.
totally.
So if someone wanted to move here to the Bay Area and it was felt like I'm alone, I don't know where to go, I'd consider moving into the Vulcan.
I would, but it's also like you, it's definitely like a culture shock, the neighborhood. Like it's like I always tell
Yeah.
people it's like Mad Max out here. There's like car fires and gunshots and it's a lot of high crime.
It's yeah, that's the bad part. The area, the actual neighborhood is not great.
The neighborhood is like, but my rent is so cheap, you know, it's like so, and I use all the workspace. So one of these days I want to have like a little house where I can have a garden, not so much in the hood. So that's, you know, that's a goal that I'm working towards. I think more than the whole like trying to be like on America's Got Talent and like super well known for my juggling or anything like that. I just
I'm
like,
not sure if that direction really exists anymore anyways.
yeah.
You know, like when I was coming up, there was a lot of professional jugglers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was raised in the generation after, like, the Kris Kremos and the Albert Lucases and the Dick Francos. And, you know, we'd go to Vegas, we'd see them in the review shows. And so you sort of saw this professional jugglers and how they worked and what it was like.
Yeah.
And now I think people get into juggling, but it's like there's not as many venues to work. It's just harder to get that experience that allows you to kind of put an act together that will get you someplace.
Yeah, and
Because you.
that's the whole how America is, that's the American like circus dream. Like when you go to other countries, like circus being a circus performer is looked at as like a respected career.
Yeah.
You could go to a bunch of different theaters to, you know, sell them your show and do tours all over. Like in America, it's harder to do that. It's like being a professional circus artist isn't really much of a thing.
And if you're not doing Cirque du Soleil or like a
Yeah.
group like that, and then if you're in Cirque du Soleil, all of a sudden you find yourself in this big corporate machine.
Totally. And then a lot of them don't even really get paid that well.
Now, it's surprising. I think also once they sold it to the Saudi Arabia, you know, the management sold it. From what I heard from the performers, is a lot of the things that made it nice, the little perks, you know, extra day at the hotel or, you know, go back and take a shower or whatever. They started cutting back on those things.
Yeah, that's what I've heard too.
Little nickel and dime stuff, you know, so.
That's what I've heard too. So, and it's just like, I have to admit, it would be nice for me to do more gigs. Like, I just need to put more
Right.
effort into it, to actually look for the gigs.
And you think America's Got Talent, like something like that, even though it'd give
No.
you more exposure? It's
No.
just no. That's a big no.
No. And that's not really my
No.
motive. No, I'm more of the, for me, it's a, you know, personal development of like my own creativity, making my own art, you know, when it comes to tricks and all this and that. And the well-known part is not really like that's not like a focus of mine. I'm not in it for like to be a performer, you know, it just kind of comes with it. It happens to be a performance art that is my hobby.
I think it's nice, like if you start getting some recognition in the community, like people start to see you and like, oh, there's Cassandra, you know, oh, I saw
Yeah.
her perform or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think what I like about this podcast is everyone sort of approaches it from a different direction. Everyone has a different story
Totally.
about how they utilize juggling and the flow arts, you know, to enhance their lives. Some are professionals, some are part-time, some are hobbyists,
Totally.
and it's all valid.
Yeah, totally. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's like whatever you get into, object manipulation or juggling with whatever motive, it's nothing, none of it's wrong. Like, you know, if you want to be just a performer, and that's what your motive is, and go for it.
Sometimes I think, like when I'm doing it, I think, well, at least it's good exercise. Like,
Totally.
even if I don't, it's like it's good exercise. It keeps me, I enjoy doing it. It's just for so long I had a purpose for it.
Yeah.
And now the purpose is diminished. I'm like, is it enough just to do it for itself and have nobody pay me for it?
That's more of a lot of, like I was saying, a lot of people that put too much pressure on themselves. And I know a lot of people that end up quitting because they just feel like, you know, this it's not going to be their career, so they quit. I've had so many people that were really good for a long time that put a lot of time into it tell me that. And I'm just like, And they're like, well, I didn't see a future in it for me, and so I decided to stop doing it. And I'm not going to be a dentist, but it doesn't mean I'm going to stop brushing my teeth. It's like, it doesn't
I
take
mean,
that much
yeah,
time out of
that's a
your
good.
day.
Don't quit. Like I say, it might not be like. I think that's it's sad though. Sometimes it's hard when you have to realize, oh, this really isn't going to be anything. I'm not going to really make this. I can't really make this my living. I'd maybe rather just step away from it entirely and focus on something else.
You could do anything for like 20 minutes a day, and it's a significant amount of practice or doing the thing. So it's like, in 20 minutes isn't that long of a anything, 10 minutes, whatever. You don't even have to do it every day, once every few months, whatever. It's like you don't have to quit completely. People just put too much pressure on themselves.
Yeah, it's tough because I think it's hard because we see around us other people maybe making it or being successful or being performers. It's not right. It's not right for everybody. It really isn't.
And then,
So you have to know yourself, right?
yeah, totally. And I mean, and it's totally fine to do the art and not make it your career.
I think so too. It's hard though, like I say, when you've done it for your career and now all of a sudden it's not your career, and that's where I'm at, so.
I think a lot of people in the art form do look at you differently when you don't want to make it your career. But it's also like commit to the bit. Like if you're like, I mean, you can make it a casual thing and just be like, hey, I want it to be my casual thing. You don't have to like take out other people's pressure and really make yourself confused, Because I did that for a little while where it was like everyone I felt like was pressuring me to be a performer. And I was like, you know what? No, I can perform when I want to, and I don't have to make it my career. And I don't think of myself any less of a object manipulator or juggler. So it's fine.
I think it's because you carry yourself as a performer type. Like you have a big presence, right?
I feel that. I mean, totally. And
So
I mean, when I appreciate, I've had people tell me that too. You have a loud presence.
it's not about that. Like I say, it's good to have like a community where people know you. It's nice. It's like that bar Cheers, right? Everybody knows your name. It's nice when you
Totally, it's
walk
fun.
in.
You have
And now I
friends.
feel like when I walk in, like before, like when in my heyday, Dan. Now it's like, who's that? Like nobody, like who's that guy?
I
Who's
mean,
that old guy on the corners?
whatever, but then you have your community of people that you've known for a long time too. It's even my roommate knows knew who you were. He was part of the scene for a long time. And I was like, yeah, I'm about to do this podcast with Dan Holzman. And he was like, oh, Dan.
Yeah, I remember him from like 30 years ago.
Yeah, so it's just like,
Like a guy came up to me at Portland. He goes, I think it was from the show director. He goes, oh, you would have been great in the show. Hey, thanks, man. 20 years ago.
what? He said
Yeah,
that? Oh,
it was in a joking fashion,
yeah,
but
totally. It
it
was
was
just
like, oh, okay,
lighthearted
thanks, man.
heckle.
You would have been great in the show. Hey, thanks. 20 years ago.
Yeah, I
It
mean, it's a lighthearted heckle, but you gotta be careful.
was fun. It
Yeah,
was fun.
so that's fine.
I understand. I
Yeah.
understand. Hey, we've come to the end of our time. I
Okay.
knew this would go fast because we've always have nice conversations.
Yeah.
Any last little bits of advice or words of wisdom or any last sort of pithy little ending sequence you want to give us before we call this a day?
I mean, have fun with it. That's all I'm gonna say.
Don't quit.
Don't
Let's not
quit.
don't quit.
Yeah, have fun and don't quit. Don't put pressure on yourself. Don't compare yourself to other people. Just do what you love. And don't quit.
Don't quit.
I've seen a
And find out what
lot.
your colors are and get that
Get
logo.
them branding colors in.
Well, hey, thank you so much, Cassandra. This has been really fun. Thanks for being on Drop Everything. And this is number 136. So a big special thanks to my guest, Cassandra Smythe. Thank you, Cassandra.
Thanks for having me, Dan.
I hope you enjoyed Drop Everything podcast number 136, my conversation with Cassandra Smythe. Thanks, Cassandra. Good luck with everything you do, with mad tech manipulations, with your bartending gig, with spreading joy and juggling throughout the world, and of course, your impeccable fashion sense. Also, thanks again to Around Square for hooking me up with some dope toys, including Bagleri, Knucklebones, and MK Ultras. Don't forget also to visit the IJA at juggle.org. They do so much for the juggling community, especially putting on their yearly festival this summer in Indiana. So check it out at juggle.org. All right, go out there and drop everything except when you're juggling.